Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the propaganda wars when we come back. You know, when you're making $50,000 a year, you're paying $7,650 in Social Security taxes. Then, on top of that, you pay a 17% income tax on that same $50,000. Now, that's another $8,500 that you have to pay, and it's an extra $1,300 that you're paying on a tax, on a tax. Well, now, that makes the real effective Social Security tax rate 17.8%. It's not the 15.3% that's being advertised. Now, isn't that just real special? Now, if you'd like more information about this tax and status, why don't you call us at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Help take a bite out of crime. Call and ask for my free general law CD package. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law school, and it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Now, tax and status, our school is available on compact disc for adult home education, and if you're online, you can go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email. Send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, the propaganda wars. Propaganda, it really doesn't mean lie. If you look it up in the dictionary, propaganda is information that you're receiving, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a lie. It's not quite like spin. Spin, now, is not exactly a lie, but it's not exactly the truth. I pointed that out to you when I cited to you yesterday. President Reagan, when he was speaking to the organization here that we're reading about, it's the National Information Agency, he said that more than 40 years ago, I was a pioneer in radio, a sports announcer. Now, this is President Reagan now, when he was a sports announcer 40 years ago. He said, I found myself broadcasting Major League Baseball games from telegraphed reports. I wasn't at the stadium. Now, if the game was rather dull, you could say, it's a hard hit ball down toward second base. The shortstop is going over after the ball and makes a wild stab, picks it up, turns, and gets him out just in time. Now, I submit to you that I told the truth. If he was out from shortstop to first, and I don't know whether he really ran over toward second base and made a one-handed stab, or whether he just squatted down and took the ball when it came to him, but the truth got there. And in other words, it can be attractively packaged. Now, I pointed this out yesterday, that what happens when you attractively package it is that you create a perception, and the perception is false. And that's the point of propaganda. We're going to use the truth to transmit to you a false impression. We want you to believe a lie, but we're going to tell you the truth in order to create that false impression in your mind. Sometimes we have to take some facts that are patently false and then package those with some facts which are patently true, in order to come up with an overall conclusion, which is false. So the point is, we're going to deceive you by telling you the truth. Now, how do you like that? That's what propaganda is all about. Now, there's a story here on the Korean Airlines 007 shootdown, which occurred back in 1983. Now, for a lot of you people, that's beyond your lifetime. 1983, 93, 103, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You know, we're talking about nearly 25 years ago. And for some of you, that's a long time. But to me, an old man, I can remember it like it was yesterday. I remember the newspaper headlines. I remember the propaganda ploys that were on both sides. The Russians said that it was a specially outfitted spy plane, which was flying with Korean Airlines. It was with passengers on it, flying over Soviet airspace and over their missile bases and so on, taking photographs, pretending to be just a commercial airliner that's off course. Now, you know, at the time, nobody on this side of the ocean believed that because our government denied it. And, of course, we're all Americans. And so Americans, when we hear the story come out of CBS and ABC, we believe that our press is free. Hell, even if that was true, that doesn't mean that what they're telling you is true. And we saw here last time that even the National Information Agency employees themselves admitted that from time to time they were lied to and duped by the Air Force, the White House, or the Congress or congressional committees. In other words, you know, in the propaganda war, all's fair. You know, whatever it takes. You know, we got a goal in mind, and we're going to apply whatever means that it takes to arrive at that goal. Now, here's the story. It's kind of a long and involved one. But it's an interesting story, and as we go along, we'll stop and make a few comments about how we're being deceived. And so then when you receive information about 9/11, or you receive information from the White House press secretary, or when you hear somebody says, well, here's the White House spin on this story, you'll be in a better position then to evaluate, well, who's lying to me, and how do I get behind that lie? Because there is a technique, and I showed you that last week. I said the Kwok-Ting test is what we apply to this, the Kwok-Ting test, so that we can delineate, well, what are the obvious lies and what is the obvious truth. And then when we put this together, we ask ourselves, what is it that these people are trying to create in our minds? What is it that they want us to believe? And that's the overall lie. Then we can make a reasoned deduction as to, well, what probably is the truth here. It may not be absolute, but it'll be closer than what we're getting from Katie Couric and Brian Williams. Now, it's chapter 4, and it's called The 5-Minute Gap. Now, remember, we're reviewing the book. It's called Warriors of Disinformation. It's about a 1 in 20 book. There's a lot of books out there in the market. But what makes us a 1 in 20, not a 1 in 100, but a 1 in 20, is that it's written by an insider who is actually there. He's not giving us any top secrets. I mean, he's not coming right out and saying, well, now this is a classified secret that you're not supposed to know, and I'm probably going to go to prison if I tell you this. He's not revealing that. He's telling you this is the inside workings of the organization. The Russians know it. The Chinese know it. And the government agents know it. The people who don't understand it, that's the Joe Sixpacks and Sally Housewives that are paying for all of it. That's you and me. We don't know how it works until an insider explains it to us. Then we say, oh, my God, I didn't know they were doing that. Okay, well, let's find out, and then we'll be able to say, oh, yeah, I've known for a long time that that's what they've been doing. With its 269 passengers and crew, the Korean Airlines flight KE-007 was cruising on the last leg of its journey to Seoul, South Korea, little more than 3 hours away, on August the 30th, 1983. Its flight crew, giddy from jet lag, was relaxed and chatting drowsily, unaware that the aircraft had strayed off course over Soviet territory and was being hunted down by Russian interceptor planes armed with cannons and air-to-air missiles. In his Sukhoi 15 fighter, Major Gennady Osipovich had KE-007 on his radar scope, and he could see its dim outline through the clouds, and he had made several maneuvers to signal that the plane should identify itself and immediately land. But there was no response. Soviet military authorities at ground tracking stations believed that it was an American spy plane. Major Ospovich locked onto the target with his missiles and prepared to shoot it down. We now know many of the details of the tragedy from actual verbatim transcripts of the conversations between the pilots and the ground controllers. Almost 10 years after the incident, the Russians released original tapes and transcripts of the conversations between the USSR ground centers and their interceptor pilots, as well as ground-to-ground communications between the USSR radar defense centers. Now, the Russians also made available the black box, the flight recorder retrieved from the ocean floor with the voices of long-dead crew members. Tapes were deciphered in neutral territory, a French laboratory, and the results were turned over to experts at the International Organization of Civil Aviation in Canada, which issued its report. The Korean airliner was a wide-bodied Boeing 747-200B superjet, and it had started out from Kennedy Airport in New York after a refueling stop in Anchorage, Alaska. KE-1007 continued on its way towards Seoul, 8 hours flying time away. Now, I want to point out right here that President Nixon was on board that plane and got off in Anchorage, Alaska, and then took a different plane. Now, let me repeat that. President Nixon. Now, Nixon wasn't president when this occurred in 1983. But ex-President Nixon was on that plane with a representative by the name of Larry McDonald. And, of course, you know, 25 years after the fact that President Nixon was on the plane and then got off and took another plane, he also was on his way to Seoul, South Korea. Nixon made it, McDonald didn't. There was some kind of a meeting going on over there. And so this gave rise at the time to speculation that this was an insider black box operation by the CIA or other employees of our government, just like the President Kennedy assassination. And the objective here was to get Larry McDonald, who was an outspoken conservative in the Congress. Now, whether that's true or not, we don't know. I can't say. I can report one more fact, though. Now, remember, we talked about the Lusitania. It was also loaded with Americans, and it was also carrying armaments for Great Britain. So it is not unusual for the United States of America to put civilian passengers on ships and airplanes into harm's way in order to achieve a mission, a military mission, whether it's spying on the Russians or whether it's hauling munitions to Great Britain under the neutral flag. It's been going on for a long time. You and I might not know about it, but you can rest assured that the intelligence agencies of other countries know about it. You can rest assured that the Russian intelligence and the Chinese intelligence, you know, they're not all out of touch with reality. And then from time to time, they feel like they have to take action. Well, going on with the story, when the plane left Anchorage, its flight crew inexplicably had not set the navigational systems correctly, and during the long flight toward Asia, the plane arched on a higher path than was planned and went more than 300 miles further north as it drew closer to the Asian mainland. Navigational checks along the way by an inattentive crew failed to detect the mistake. The plane was now flying over some of the most sensitive Soviet military installations on the high seas, and KE-007 veered across the Kamchatka Peninsula, where Russia's long-range missiles were tested across the Sea of Okhotsk, where Soviet nuclear submarines held training exercises, and on toward a major Soviet forward air base on Sakhalin Island, by which point the Korean airliner was 365 miles off course. Okay, I want to point out something here. Airplanes fly all the time, and they fly all over the world. And they don't get off course by 365 miles. Now, it's true, they might get off course by 10, 20 miles. That happens. But when an airplane is off course by 365 miles, boys and girls, that's unheard of, especially for for commercial airliners. See, they have a guy on there called a navigator. He's a crew member. His job, that's all he does. He just sits there as a navigator and he navigates the plane. He's constantly making checks to see where the airplane is. Now, I'm an old-timey pilot. And let me tell you that about 90% of a pilot's job when he's flying an airplane is navigation. He's constantly taking radio navigational fixes, you know, like from a VOR station, you know, an Omni station. And those big airliners, you know, they navigate by the stars. They navigate, you know, by radio interceptions, you know, and triangulations from radio stations. That airplane was not 365 miles off course accidentally. And the Russians know that. I mean, you know, the average plumber, carpenter, electrician that doesn't fly, doesn't know about navigation, isn't tuned into airplanes, you know, that story will fly, you know, with the general public. That's just poppycock. I don't believe it for a minute. I don't believe it because I'm a pilot. I'm sitting here telling you that a commercial airliner 365 miles off course is preposterous. It's absurd. Now, some little guy like me might get lost and get 365 miles off course, but not a jumbo jet 747. So right away, I see a hole in the story here, and it says to me, probably the Russians are telling some truth here when they say, we thought the airplane was a spy plane. Makes all the sense in the world. Think about the coup. During the Cold War, there were many of these coups made by the intelligence services. One time, the Russians lost a submarine on the bottom of the ocean. Hell, it was down 5,000 feet. And we went over there and grabbed it right off the bottom of the ocean. Built a ship. You know, the Howard Hughes Company built that. That was a great coup. You know, there was some military advantage to be made. During World War II, the Americans captured a German submarine and got their Enigma black box, you know, for deciphering or decoding their code, the German code. And the Germans thought that their code was safe. No, the British and the Americans had their code and were reading their interceptions all the time. And so that contributed to the Allies winning the war and the Germans losing the war because we could read their codes. Now, those are real coups, and I'm not opposed to that. I'm not sitting here telling you that we shouldn't do that. All's fair, you know, in the intelligence wars. But now, we get a story here on the home front. We're the people that work and pay the taxes and pay for all of this, and then we get a story, see? And the primary purpose isn't so much to deceive the enemy as it is to deceive the public. Because, you know, a lot of this, if we knew what was going on, we probably wouldn't approve of it. Like these Twin Towers operations and this war in Iran in Iraq and Afghanistan. We probably wouldn't approve of it before or after the fact. Now, Colin Powell went into the United Nations, remember, and he lied. He might have believed that what he was telling was the truth, but he went in and lied. And oftentimes, government officials are lied to and deceived so that they will perpetuate this lie for the overall goal or the overall purpose. And Colin Powell was probably a victim of that. Because he later said, you know, that he was suspicious about these weapons of mass destruction. And one of his aides, top aides, said that he was suspicious of it. But he was persuaded by the photographs and by the information that he received. And so he went into the United Nations and made his presentation. Even though his presentation was false. Then a little later, he resigned from the administration in 2004. I think that Colin Powell was a pretty honest guy and said, you know, I've had enough of this. Now, when Major Ostapovich's missile slammed into the Korean airliner, it was 2:26 p.m. in Washington, D.C. Now, Wednesday, August 31st, 1983, minute by minute, top-secret American military intelligence stations near the Soviet border had monitored Ostapovich's pursuit of the KE-007 and its destruction. Deputy Foreign Minister Georgi Korenko, was given the task of telephoning Yuri Andropov, who lay deathly ill in the hospital. Korenko explained the situation to the Soviet premier, who asked Korenko to wait and not hang up while he reached Defense Minister Ustinov. In a few moments, Andropov came back with the answer. Ustinov says, "We shouldn't admit to anything." He informed Korenko, "Nobody will find out that we shot it down. It's an imperialist provocation." Now, the official line would be that the plane was intercepted over Soviet airspace, that it continued on its flight, and that there was no word of its fate. All right, let's pause right there. So the Russians decided to lie about it. I mean, they admit to that now. See, they, after it's all said and done. So when an initial transmission comes out of the White House, for instance, when the U-2 plane was shot down over Russia back in 1960 or 61, I guess it was 1960, when President Eisenhower was in office, when he was asked about it, he just flat denied it. He says, just Russian propaganda. Well, then a little later on, when it's impossible to deny, then the story comes out. So it isn't above the President of the United States to lie to us. It goes on all the time. Now, does he lie to us 90% of the time and tell us the truth 10%, or is it that he tells us the truth 90% of the time and he lies to us 10% of the time? You know, once it comes to your attention that these are routine and that these lies come out to protect national security. And so, you know, they have a reason. I mean, everybody has a reason to lie, don't they? Now, should you be lying or should you tell the truth? Now, in the Bible, there's a statement by God himself. He says, "I am the God that cannot lie." There's just one source that I know of that claims that it always tells you the truth. It is the standard by which, if we would believe it, we would always know the truth. Because, remember, I mentioned this to you the other day. I said, if I always told you the truth, you would always know the truth. And if I always lied to you, you would always know the truth. To deceive you, I have to lie to you and mix it with the truth in order to come up with this concoction called deception. And that's what these intelligence services are doing to us. They're lying to us and telling us the truth. And so we can see these true statements, and then we accept the false statements as being true. Now, that's the way the game is played. Now, our mission here is to see, can we tell the lies from the truth when we receive this? Well, remember, we took a look at the Kwok Ting test to find out what the standard is when you're listening to the story. And then, do we have corroborating evidence from other sources? And so we can take these pieces of information and evidence, and we can put it together, and we can arrive at a better version of the truth. We can get more of the story for ourselves personally by using these tools that are available to us. I mean, after all, that's what the intelligence services on both sides of the Iron Curtain were doing, and that's what both sides are doing today. You know, the Russians and the Jews and the Chinese all have their intelligence people out working. Now, years ago, there was a ship called the Liberty, and it was attacked by the Israeli Air Force out in the Mediterranean. And this is back about 1973, if I remember right. It was during that hot war, you know, or 67, maybe, 67 or 73, in which President Johnson, I guess it was 67, President Johnson was working in collaboration with the Israelis to get into the war against Egypt. And the damn ship wouldn't sink. And then the crew members, these are American Navy crew members, were all told, "You shut up." Now the objective, now think about this, the objective was to sink the ship, kill all the Americans, so that we could blame it on the Egyptians, so that America could come into the war with the Jews against Egypt. That was the plan. Now, we can't let those kinds of information, or that kind of information, reach the American public. You see, we have to keep that hidden from our own people. And we do that so that we can go on, you know, with the plan as usual. That's why we're in the war with Iraq. It's because of we were lied to so that we could get the authorization, we could get the American people behind the war. Now, it didn't work in 1967. It was kind of bizarre. here was this unarmed ship. It was a spy ship is what it was. And it was collecting all of this information from the Egyptians and from the Jews. The Jews run out, and they try to sink the ship. And the ship wouldn't sink. And so some of the crew members come back, and they've got a story to tell. So we got to put the kibosh on the story. And they did. Now, that tells us quite a bit right there. See, our government lies to us and maintains these lies for a long time. Now, sometimes these lies come out 50 years later, after, you know, everybody's dead during that era. Now, knowing that we were lied to over the battleship Maine, lied to over the Lusitania, lied to over Pearl Harbor, lied to over the Gulf of Tonkin, now when we come to 9/11 and we see the other side of the story, it doesn't seem quite so preposterous now, does it? Now, going on with the story, Secretary of State George Shultz first became aware of this incident when he received a phone call about 6:30 on Thursday morning. Shultz had invited friends from California to stay at his home in Bethesda, Maryland for the Labor Day weekend. When he read that a Korean airliner had been shot down, his first reaction before reading further was that Lebanese fanatics were responsible. Shultz arrived at the State Department office at 7:45 a.m. because President Reagan was in California for the weekend. So Shultz was designated to take the lead for the United States that morning. Undersecretary of State Lawrence Eagleburger gave Shultz an update on the situation. State Department press spokesman John Hughes was next in line. He needed to discuss whether or not to release intelligence information confirming that the Soviets had shot down the Korean civilian airliner, killing all on board. So how do you want to handle it? Shultz asked. Well, if we're right, we don't have to massage the story, replied Hughes. Let's get out everything we have and let it play. So Shultz thought Hughes should break the news of the Korean airliner's fate at his morning press briefing. Go out and do your number, John, Shultz advised. Hughes replied that because of the magnitude of the story, Shultz himself should appear. More information arrived shortly after 9. U.S. and Japanese intelligence had eavesdropped on the Soviet pilot talking to his ground controller who ordered the destruction of KE-007. So Hughes then learned some interesting news. Eagleburger had heard that there might be an audio tape of the air-to-ground communication with a Soviet pilot who shot down the Korean airliner. Tapes? You mean there are tapes of this? Asked an astonished Hughes. We hear there is an actual tape recording of the Soviet combat pilot chattering about shooting down the Korean plane. Japanese intelligence has it, said Eagleburger. Where did the Japs get it? Asked Hughes. Well, it was recorded at a top-secret listening post in Hokkaido, replied Eagleburger, and the NSA is also involved out there. The Japanese themselves may not even know about it. So if we make it public, we'll have to say where we got it, and that's a tough call. This'll blow the Russians right out of the water, exclaimed Hughes. It's overwhelming evidence that we simply have to get it. Now, let's pause here for a moment and let's look at this. How did this intelligence come about? Because if we tell the Russians that we're listening in on their conversations, then the Russians are going to know, oh my God, they've actually got the capacity to listen to us talking on the radio. Now, there was a case back in World War II where this came up. You remember, I mentioned this, that after the Americans and the British had broken the German code, oftentimes they would get intelligence of moves that the Germans were making that we could have easily outdone. You know, we could have been prepared for them. But you see, the other side's not stupid either. If the Germans are preparing a military attack, and they've got it all secretly planned out, and then they launch their attack, and the British and the Americans are waiting for them. Well, then, you know, you don't have to be real smart to figure out, hell, they knew we were coming. So sometimes, when you know what's going to happen, you don't take precautions. Because there's an overall bigger view of the playing field in mind. And Pearl Harbor was a classic case. See, we had already broken the Japanese code. We knew the Japanese were on the way. We knew that they were going to attack. And we knew that they were going to attack in the Hawaiian Islands. We didn't know where in the Hawaiian Islands, but you know, you don't have to be real smart to figure out probably it's going to be Pearl Harbor. And, you know, what other targets are there? Pineapple plantations? We could have been prepared for the Japanese attack, but if we had been prepared for the attack, then the Japanese would know that we'd broken their code and they'd change their code, and so then for the rest of the war, we wouldn't be able to, you know, listen into what they were planning and what they were doing. And the Americans wanted to get into the war, just like we put all of those munitions on the Lusitania with American passengers so that the Germans would sink it, so that we'd have a propaganda ploy to exploit, so that we could say, look at those dirty Germans over there, what they've done. And that's what that weapon of mass destruction was all about with the Iraqis. The thing that has always bedeviled me is, why didn't President Bush anticipate that there might not be weapons of mass destruction? So why didn't they just manufacture them, and then right after the war, fly in five plane loads of nerve gas and something, you know, from the United States, brand it with the Iraqi brand, and then say, look what we found. Look at all of these weapons of mass destruction. And we could have blamed it on them. I think that we were so overconfident that we were going to find him, so certain that he's got him, that we didn't prepare for that eventuality. Then we had to invent it. And now that we tried to invent it, now the truth comes out. 4 years later, it was all a lie. Well, could we have known more sooner? Probably. Probably. All right, we're talking about a wild book here. It's called The Warriors of Disinformation. These are the warriors of lies. And it's the lying Americans and the lying Russians deceiving the Russian and American public. That's what it really boils down to. We're being deceived, but you can rest assured that the intelligence services aren't. They know what's going on. Now let's listen in and see if we can figure out what's going on. Now, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives and can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend will necessarily reciprocate. and that's because most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be political or religious or economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. The book that we're reviewing here is called Warriors of Disinformation by Alvin A. Snyder. You can just call good folks down at BraveNewBookstore.com in Austin, Texas, and if you got a credit card, I think they can just take it right over the phone. Or you can probably get a copy at Barnes & Noble. You may get a copy in a used bookstore. I've got a copy here that's paperback. And remember, what you're looking for here is Warriors of Disinformation. I mean, the book is just filled with story after story of newspaper quality, just like this 007 Korean Airlines. I mean, at the time, this was big news. This was a big event. And I believed all the lies that my government told me about it at the time. And it wasn't until I read the story, you know, that I said, oh, my God, look how we were lied to and deceived. Just like the battleship Maine. Oh, my God, look how we were lied to and deceived. And, of course, we look back in our history books and we read the history of it. And we don't read anything about the lying deceptions that were propagated at the time, perpetrated. And of course, my great-granddad, he was totally deceived about the Lusitania. The only reason I know about it is because in 1967, the classification, you know, the top secret was taken off of, and it was published in the newspaper, that the Lusitania was, in fact, carrying arms and munitions. Then I went back and took, oh, my God, look at this. The Germans put 5 ads in 5 newspapers and said, if we catch that ship, we're going to sink it. Americans weren't told that. The people who were the sacrificial lambs on the Lusitania did not have an opportunity to make a choice. And the people that were riding on that Korean Airlines plane, which in all probability was in fact a spy plane, specially outfitted by the Americans, so that when the plane flew over the Soviet Union, the ruse would be, gee, it's just a commercial airliner that's off course. And would the Russians shoot down an unarmed Korean airliner? And the answer is yes, they would. And yes, they did. And was it a great propaganda blitz for America? Oh, you bet it was. Yeah, we scored a lot of points off of those 269 dead bodies. But those 269 dead bodies were sacrificial lambs. So a question arises. Would your government, the United States of America, would your government, the Kingdom of Great Britain, would your government, the government of Canada or Australia, sacrifice their own citizens in one of these sinister plots to gather intelligence and information? In a heartbeat. Have they done it before? So many times, I can't count them all. Are they doing it today? Without any doubt. Without any reservations at all. Absolutely. Will they do it again in the future? You can bet on it. You can take that one to the bank. Could it kill you? Not very likely. I mean, you know, 269 people getting killed is a tragedy for the 269 families involved and the people that got killed. You know, to you and I, it's just a statistic. It's just a historical footnote. Nothing more, nothing less. But if you don't want to become one of those historical footnotes, then maybe a good understanding of what government does, how it does it, and why, adds to our overall view of the world. Now, Japanese and American intelligence officials had to be persuaded to release what they had. And according to former Assistant Secretary of State Gregory J. Newall, they knew if the tape was made public, it would expose their intelligence-gathering activity in that region, and operations there would be about 90% useless. So now the United States people, you know, I have to say, do we want to let the Russians know? And the answer came out, yeah, we want them. We'll sacrifice our intelligence gathering ability here for this propaganda move. This is part of war. The Cold War was a war that was being waged, and there's going to be a winner and there's going to be a loser. Now, as it turns out, the Russians, the communists, the Chinese, are the clear winners of the Cold War. Pause. And now everybody's sitting there going, why, has this guy Gordon lost his marbles? Why, no. The Russians lost the Cold War. Excuse me, boys and girls. Excuse me, wait a minute. Hang on a second here. Who won the Cold War? Here in America, we say, no, we Americans won it. Why, they took down the Berlin Wall. Wait a minute. Wasn't the Cold War an ideological war over the Ten Commandments or the Bill of Rights versus the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto? Wasn't it an ideological war over the hearts and minds of the people of the world? Who won the Cold War? Well, let's take a look. When the Cold War began, this is at the end of World War II, Americans are sitting over here espousing our Bill of Rights, our Constitution, our democratic processes, our freedoms and liberties. And we're measuring those against the Russians and the Chinese later. And we said, look at that totalitarian regime. Look at those people who are lacking in freedom. And look at their managed press. And look at, they're not getting the truth from their newspapers. And look at this. They've got the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And they don't get to vote. And they don't get to elect. And they don't have this and that and another thing. All right, now let's take a look at where we're at. If you take a look at the Russians, have the Russians adopted any of our democratic processes? And if you think they have, can you write them out? Can you take a piece of paper and write it down? I mean, in your mind, you probably, oh yeah, of course, you know, why the Russians are democratic. Democratic? Huh? Whatever gave you that idea? Have you been reading your newspapers? Hell, even Katie Couric is complaining about the undemocratic regime over in Russia today. Have the Russians changed tactics? Oh, you bet. Yeah, they've changed their tactics. But does that mean they lost the Cold War? Let's think about it. Take the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Here in America, we didn't practice a single one of the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto as recently as 1900. We weren't practicing that. Today, 100 years later, we practice all 10. See, we have a heavy progressive income tax, just like they do. And we have a central bank just like they do. And we have free education for all children in public schools just like they do. You see, boys and girls, we Americans, Canadians, Australians, and New Zealanders, we have adopted all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. They have not adopted one single iota of our Bill of Rights or of our democratic processes. Nothing. Now, we've got trade relations with the Chinese. They're just as firmly communist as they've always been. Hell, they don't even put on the trappings of democracy. And you've been watching, you know, what this Putin is doing over in Russia, haven't you? I mean, he's running Russia from behind the scenes through a front man now. Now, I don't know if that's good or bad or right or wrong. I'm not here to tell you. I'm just here to tell you that there's a propaganda war going on out there. And what our objective is here in the propaganda war is to make you believe that the Russians lost, the Americans won. But the objective is to impose communism on all the world. So instead of calling it communism, we call it democracy. All of the presidential candidates in the election of 2008 are communists, with the exception of one, Ron Paul. He's the only non-communist there. All of the rest of the candidates are in favor of government-sponsored education, the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. All of the candidates are in favor of the income tax and the central bank. The only guy that's opposed to that's Ron Paul. And Americans are not supporting Ron Paul. Americans support communism. Americans are practitioners of communism. And you Canadians and Australians and New Zealanders and you Western Europeans, you're all communists. And you all practice communism. If you send your children to public school, that's the 10th plank. If you're using paper money from your central bank, that's the 5th plank. If you're paying an income tax, that's the 2nd plank. Come on, kids. Now, the communists won the Cold War, hands down. We're all practicing communists around the world. And we not only practice it, we love it. We've adopted it. It's a part and parcel of our program. It's the centerpiece of the New World Order. Communism. Now, we don't call it communism anymore. We've hung a new label on it. We call it democracy. So President Bush is running around the world spreading democracy. And the Muslims are rejecting it. See, the Muslims are the only group of people in the world. They're the last people in the world that are resisting communism. They don't want it. And so we run over there and we say, well, look at these Muslims. Why, they don't have democracy. So we've got to impose democracy upon them. The president can't run around saying we're going to impose communism upon them. Hell, that's what we spent, all of our treasure in 40 years of the Cold War fighting was communism. Now we've won the war against communism. So now what are we fighting? Well, we're fighting against totalitarian terrorists so that we can bring the world democracy, so that everybody can have free education for all children in public schools, a central bank, paper money, and all of the other 7 planks to the manifesto. We want to practice all of it. All right, so now that's what propaganda is all about. It's to win the hearts and minds of people. So if you're sending your children to public school, they have won your heart and won your mind. You are a willing participant in a communist program. And if you're using your central bank and you're paying your income tax and you're a productive member of society, God love you. It's like Katie Couric and Brian Williams. They have won the hearts and souls and the minds of the Americans, Canadians, Australians, Western Europeans. I mean, hell, the war is over. And I remember that old Lenin once made this observation. He said that what we're going to do is we're going to hang you. And we're going to buy the rope from you. I thought, well, now that's quite a statement. We're going to hang you people with your own rope. We're going to buy it from you. All right. Now, that's part and parcel with the propaganda war. Hell of a neat program. So they had to be persuaded now that they're going to give up their intelligence source. And we're going to let the Russians know, okay, here's where we got the information. But now we're going to use the information we got and we're going to pummel you with it. Now, the Reagan administration spin machine began cranking up. Notice the spin machine, the Reagan administration spin machine. And that meant that the USIA, that's the United States Information Agency, was getting involved. Thursday afternoon, Wick, the head of the USIA, ordered his top agency aides to form a special task force to devise ways of playing the story overseas. The objective, quite simply, was to heap as much abuse on the Soviet Union as possible. As the USIA's director of television, I was on that committee, which was chaired by senior Foreign Service officer Jack Hedges. We quickly established contact with the Korean working group at the State Department, which was having trouble identifying the passenger list from the downed plane, and it was unclear whether any of the passengers with Korean or Chinese surnames were American citizens. The USIA overseas posts, assisted by checking press contacts and by monitoring the local media coverage. Now, to keep the Soviets' feet to the fire, our task force came up with a list of immediate objectives. Here's what they were. We wanted to reinforce the impact of the worldwide reaction against the Soviet shootdown by emphasizing its human and multinational dimensions. We wanted to stimulate continuing international attention that the issues raised by this tragedy are of concern to all nations and inform those without ready access to commercial media for political reasons, such as in the USSR, or technological reasons, such as in the Third World nations, by way of the Voice of America and the agency print and the TV output. So the Voice of America's radio transmitters were pumped up to maximum power, and the KE007 story led every news broadcast. Gut-wrenching interviews were made with families of victims were featured. Transmitters were redirected to beam 56 hours of additional language programs per day into the Soviet Union, whose citizens had not been informed by their government of the KE007 incident. Special video cassette programs on the disaster, including statements by Reagan and excerpts from the UN debate, were air-shipped to the U.S. embassies abroad, which were not as yet equipped with their own TV satellite receiving dishes to obtain such programs instantaneously. The point of all of this was to portray the fighter pilot as a reckless cowboy and the Soviet military authorities generally as a bunch of Keystone Cops with their fingers on the nuclear trigger. We were all told that we had the goods. State Department spokesman claimed the United States had evidence proving that the Russian pilot knew that he was downing a civilian plane. And I think that it was understood that it was a commercial aircraft, said State Department official Richard Burke, and he told newsmen in private briefings that he was certain that the Soviets knew that it was a civilian airliner. And dozens of Soviet-bashing U.S. government spokesmen began telephoning media contacts. A few hours after Shultz's news conference, the California White House issued a statement by President Reagan condemning the Soviet action. And I speak for all Americans and for the people everywhere who cherish civilized values in protesting this Soviet attack on an unarmed civilian passenger plane, said Reagan. Words can scarcely express our revulsion at this horrifying act of violence. The United States joins with other members of the international community in demanding a full explanation for this appalling and wanton misdeed. Reporters wanted to know whether Reagan would cut his vacation short and return to Washington. Press spokesman Larry Speaks said the president would stay in touch with KE007 developments from his California ranch and leave the next morning for Washington. All right, now the purpose behind this is to cover up the fact that 007 is an American spy plane flying under somebody else's flag, just like the Lusitania was an American arms-carrying ship under the banner of a foreign flag, carrying arms and munitions from the factories in Indiana to Great Britain to aid the Allies in the war against Germany. All right? Now, that's past tense history. Now, the story we got was because of this propaganda blitz, we learn a little later in the story, the guy that gets in there first with the mostest usually wins these battles in the propaganda war. So, the same thing happened with the U-2 spy plane. The immediate response on our side was, deny it. See, the U-2 was a great propaganda blitz for the Russians. And it showed Americans for the first time that we were overflying their territory and taking pictures. Well, today we're doing the same thing. Both sides have satellites up in orbit, and we're taking pictures all the time. And the Russians are taking pictures all the time. And the Chinese are taking pictures. Everybody is taking pictures all the time. And so the satellite technology has gotten to the point that in World War III, when this big blow-up comes, you're going to see a Star Wars you're going to see satellites being shot down. That's so that the Chinese will be shooting down the American satellites, and the Americans will be shooting down the Chinese satellites so that they can't take pictures of us. And then all sides will be sending up new satellites so that they can go into orbit and take pictures of the enemy's installations. It's a part of an ongoing process that's been going on for thousands of years. Everybody wants to know what the other side's doing. And, you know, sometimes in the process, some innocent civilians get killed. All right, so let's, you and I, understand that our government and the Russian government and Chinese government, if they have to sacrifice a few sacrificial lambs called civilians in the process, well, so be it. So what's the big deal? Okay, well, the big deal is, you know, 3,000 people were killed in those Twin Towers back, you know, on 9/11. 3,000 people got killed. In Pearl Harbor, you know, about 3,000 American sailors got killed. And it was orchestrated by, it was known in advance by our government officials. And so they just let it happen. Now, watch what's coming down next. We're going to have this happen again, and it may happen with a nuclear weapon. And it may be a nuclear weapon in downtown Manhattan, or a nuclear weapon in downtown Los Angeles. And then we'll have to place the blame someplace. And so it'll be a blame-placing game. And you'll notice it immediately after the 9/11 attacks. Within hours, they had identified the attackers. They came back with photographs and said, here's the attackers, there's 20 of them. Now, after the fact, we find out that some of these guys that have been identified as the Muslim attackers, hell, they're still alive and well over in Saudi Arabia. Today, they weren't killed in those attacks. That's because they weren't on those airplanes. And so you sit there and you say, well, how in the world could they do that? Oh, just stick with the program here, children. There's more to come. There's more to this story than meets the eyeball. And after all, that's what deception is all about. Deception is for the express purpose of getting you to believe something that isn't true. So the Twin Towers actually fell down on videotape in front of your eyeballs. Airplanes actually ran into the buildings, but that's not why the buildings fell down. You see. But the perception worldwide is that it is, and so it has smeared the Muslims, hasn't it? Everybody sees a Muslim as a terrorist, don't they? That's the outcome that was desired. That's the outcome that they have achieved. Well, isn't that just special? Well, okay. Let's give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement, and the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And if you'd like more information about our homeschooling program, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time's up. We got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.